Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Retall. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
This is Weekly Comic Spotlight 109 for comics that originally came out on September 9th, 2009. Starting us off in DC is Booster Gold number 24 with a co-feature of Blue Beetle. And I read these last night after a really long work week. See, that's how tired I am.
Did work reek while you were...
Yeah, well, I mean, long hours to like, you know, 9 and 10 some nights.
Good having a job.
It's good having a job. I agree with that. I'm not complaining about that. It's good having sleep, too. So I was just kind of exhausted when I read these late last night. And, I, looking over how I've rated the books for this week, I got to feel that kind of impact and stuff. Overall, I liked this issue of Blue Beetle. It had some great art. It progressed the overall story. A lot happened in here. I'm a little afraid that it's not as accessible as it could have been, because it really starts in the thick of the action, and it gets you up to speed as you go. So I want to be clear on that. It's not inaccessible. It's just not as accessible as it could be, particularly, I think, to people who may not be that familiar with the early Wolfman Perez New Teen Titans, because that's when some of the key scenes are set. Now, I remember reading those. I really enjoy that period of the Titans, so this issue worked great for me in that respect. But those things also came out 20, 30 years ago. So, you know, I gotta wonder if people who aren't familiar with the early Trigon stuff, the original Ravager and all that stuff, if they might get a little confused in a few places. There was one or two when they reintroduced some of the heroes that Rip Hunter's hanging with this issue. I didn't think they did as good of a job as they could have, because for a little bit, and again, I was tired when I read this, I was thinking Zatanna was Donna Troy. And, you know,
really, I
shouldn't have. I admit, you know, the Z earrings, you know.
Yeah, I thought that they, because I actually just read issue 23, like, about a week ago. I hadn't gotten around to read, that was the one with, what's her name from Attack of the Show on...
Blair Butler, yeah.
Blair Butler on the cover. I hadn't gotten around to reading that, and I just read it, so I kind of had the storyline relatively fresh in my mind. So,
whereas I read that the week it came out,
right, a good like a month ago.
Yep.
Strangely enough, no, I can see where we got that. I mean, I really have been liking Booster Gold lately, and this issue was really, you know, it was firing on all cylinders for me. I like how Booster has been really taking it up a notch and not just being the guy with the logos plastered all over his costume, kind of jerk kind of character. He's coming into his own as, you know, pretty decent heroic figure.
Yeah, they've matured the character quite a bit.
Yeah.
I really like the twist they did with the Black Beetle.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to me, that was really interesting. I'm curious where they're going with that. And it could either be really cool or really, I don't want to say redundant, but you know what I mean. Kind of, I hope they go somewhere new and unique with this and not try to follow down the path of other storylines we've seen elsewhere. I did really like kind of the trophy room that we saw here. But those kinds of things always usually work for me.
Yeah. Trying to pick out all the, you know, what all the things are and everything, so. And I, you know, they tied the Blue Beetle in to some, I mean, this Black Beetle character, you know, we're going to have, when you find out who the Black Beetle is, or what the deal is with the Black Beetle eventually, he seems to be collecting up these different colored scarabs, and not really sure you know, what the different color scarabs all do. Is there going to be some relationship between that and the Green Lantern colors? Who knows? Hadn't really thought of that before, but, you know, he gets the red scarab, and he gets the blue scarab, and...
Well, presumably there's a black one, because, I mean, that's what he's...
Well, yeah, he's black, so one would imagine.
Yeah, we'll see where they go with that. Again, it could be really cool, but if it's just a redundancy to the Green Lantern stuff, that'll be a little disappointing, unless they've got a cool twist for it. And we'll see. I mean, so far, it's fun. I had mixed feelings on the backup feature. I liked it. Again, great art, good story, not brilliant in terms of the story. I mean, it was good, but what got me is it seemed to have no connection to the previous story, as best I can recall. Now, you...
Well, I think that the thing here is that the Black Beetle jump... Well, I mean, it's starting a new thing, right? So, I mean, these guys are just off wandering around. I mean, it had connection in that the Scarab is continuing to want to do ultraviolence on people, you know, and Jaime finally at the end says, okay, go nuts, so we'll see where that goes.
I mean, I thought this was a good backup feature, but it just started at a kind of a clean slate point, which is good. It gives it accessibility. I like that. But this is something that I think might have worked better for me if they'd told both parts in a regular issue versus split over a backup feature.
Yeah.
And as much as I liked the backup feature, it's not like I could recommend the book based if you were just wanting the Blue Beetle part. You know. I don't think people would be disappointed with it, and certainly I think Blue Beetle fans should be picking this up. But if for some reason you hated Booster Gold, which, you know, I would hope nobody does, because I think they're doing, like you said, some great stuff, really maturing the character. He's coming into his own. And the Black Beetle's an interesting tie between the two storylines to kind of further justify Blue Beetle being here. But, I don't know, the whole backup feature is something that I have mixed feelings on in terms of, are people who drop Blue Beetle going to start picking up Booster Gold because of the Blue Beetle backup feature, you know, or not?
You have to like the backup feature an awful lot to buy a comic for the 10-page backup, you know, for $4.
Yeah.
If you don't like or don't, you know, don't care for the main feature.
Well, I think what's going to be really interesting is when they get enough of these backup features, you know, for each one, to kick them out to a trade and how they package it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Because what they may find is there are a lot of people who will pick up that trade that weren't picking up these issues because all they want is the Blue Beetle stuff.
Right.
So we may see some interesting dynamics on those trade sales.
Yeah, true.
I mean, for me, I gave the main story a rating of a 4. I gave the backup a 3. And part of it with the backup is I don't know, 10 pages seems not to be satisfying me just in general. You know, and I'm finding that on a lot of the backup features. But overall, I gave the whole thing a 4. Certainly, I don't think the backup pulled it down any. And, you know, I'm looking forward to where they go on both storylines.
I like both stories. I gave, you know, I just gave the whole issue a 4. I liked the main Booster Gold story more than I liked the backup feature, but I liked them both.
Cool.
Our next feature from Marvel, Models Incorporated, number 1.
I was actually surprised you picked this up.
I was surprised I picked it up, too. I picked it up because it's got a pretty cover on it. And I think it had, like, a special discount from DCBS, so I probably didn't pay that much for it. Oh, and it's got Tim Gunn in a backup story. I can see Tim Gunn wearing Iron Man armor when I normally see him talking to fashion designers as I... flee the room as my wife is watching Project Runway.
Never having
you've probably never had to see Project Runway, so
yeah. So I was like, "Who the hell is this guy?"
Yeah,
and why should I care?
This is an interesting book. I think that I am definitely not the target audience for this book. I think the target audience for this book are, it seems it's girls. I am just curious as to what they're doing to actually get this in the hands of the target audience, because it certainly doesn't seem like people who are in a comic, even girls who go to a comic shop, I don't think are the main target audience. I'm probably broadly characterizing that in a really bad way, so sorry for offending anyone. If you're listening and you liked this, send us a note and tell us why. If you're a female listener and you like this, send us a note and tell us why.
Or if you work at a comic store and somebody has come in for the express purpose of buying this comic, come in and tell us what that demographic is, because I'm curious. Yeah.
I was reading this, and it's just not a bad story. I'm just not, you know, it seems resurrecting tons of these characters from Marvel's past who were models, and then when they had, like, kind of romance comics and stuff, and certainly Millie the Model itself ran for hundreds of issues as a comic, and Hellcat, Patsy Walker, she had her own comic. I think it was like Patsy and Hetty or something, and they had Hetty on here, and Chili Storm had a comic, and you know, these are all, you know, kind of girls romance type comics, I think, you know, from back in the 50s, 60s, maybe into the 70s. I'm not sure, but certainly haven't seen these, most of these characters other than Patsy Walker, for a tremendously long time. And not a whole lot happened in this issue other than Millie doing a really stupid thing, there at the end, which I don't want to spoil in case somebody actually picks this up, but, you know.
Well, that's the part that got me is, I mean, it's not often I'll read a comic set in the mainstream Marvel Universe, which this clearly is, because we've got Johnny Storm from the Fantastic Four showing up. We've got Hellcat as one of the main characters. She's also appearing in Marvel Divas these days. And we've got mention of Kyle Richmond, Nighthawk from the Defenders here. So clearly in the Marvel Universe. But, I mean, the leads, Millie the Model, barely familiar with that character. I'm not sure I've even heard of Tony Turner, Jill Jared, Chili Storm, or you know, a few of these other characters in here. And a lot of this is just kind of a slice of life kind of a thing. We follow these models essentially from a photo shoot back to the mansion they're staying at while they're there for Fashion Week, and then to another, you know, like concert or whatever at the end and stuff. And we get the end kind of, you know, really kind of spinning the story up, if you will. So it's kind of a slow start to the miniseries, because arguably the main plotline doesn't start until that last scene. And I didn't dislike the other stuff, but it was a more kind of slow-paced... it reminds me of something that would be like a nighttime drama-type thing on TV. You know,
yeah.
Not quite a Grey's Anatomy kind of a thing, but where people are just kind of standing around talking and... relationship type stuff. And there's nothing wrong with that. Interesting departure for comics, because most don't tend to do that. In certain respects, it felt kind of decompressed, but not too much, because quite a bit does happen here, just nothing really important, if you know what I mean. Nothing earth-shattering, I should say. Nothing overly action-oriented. And even the action scene they had with Hellcat seemed a bit out of place.
Blocked out terribly, too. I mean, it just... didn't, or they have her like kind of flipping over. It just seemed not right. Something about it like just didn't seem dynamic, you know?
Yeah.
It just didn't flow like an action scene that you'd normally see. And again, you know, I'm looking at this and I'm clearly not the target audience. So any kind of rating I give this, you know, take with a tremendous grain of salt, because It's just not something that's hitting me at all. So
I question if this was the right artist for this book. Not that the art's bad in any ways. It's perfectly fine. But this is not an artist that really does well on obviously kind of the action type stuff. Or, I mean, this is the kind of thing, if it were a TV show, I'd certainly check out the pilot. Think about it. You've got four or five hot models as the stars of a TV show. You're at least going to have something nice to look at, even if the story sucks.
Yeah, the art is kind of stiff in how it flows, and it's just not, I mean, it's competent art, but it's not, you know, this is the kind of, you know, this realistically, this is the kind of book that you want Greg Land drawing.
Or Frank Cho,
you know, it's like Greg Land could just like go nuts on like, you know, Lightbox and stuff out of Glamour magazine, and you know, wonderful thing to look at. And hell, I would buy the entire series just to look at the art. But as it is, I won't be back for a second issue of this.
I will. I'm curious. I think it's an interesting experiment. I'm completely puzzled who the target audience is and who's actually going to be buying this. I think the sales are going to be questionable on the first and plummet after that, and we'll see if that's the case or not. The backup feature I found kind of entertaining, but predictable. I mean, it's kind of a you know, walk through the costumes of the Marvel Universe through the eyes of a fashion icon, I guess. At least that's what they call him. Guy I've never heard of.
Tim Gunn. He is a fashion guy.
And it was.
You want to see more of Tim Gunn? Look at the back cover of this comic book. And he's there next to Heidi Klum. Project Runway, Thursdays, 9 Central, 10 o'clock. On now Lifetime. Used to be on Bravo, I think. My wife watches it. I have actually sat in the room while they while this is on, and it's, you know, Tim Gunn is the guy who, have you ever watched any of those kind of reality shows, like Top Chef or anything like that?
No.
Tim Gunn is the guy, it's like Project Runway is you have these fashion designers, and they get these challenges where, you know, make a dress, make this, they give them like a certain budget, and they have to go buy material and put together a dress, they put it on a model, and then they get judged. And, you know, Tim Gunn's the guy who kind of like herds the fashion designers around, and he gives them advice while they're making the dress, but he's not involved in the judging of the final product. That's where Heidi Klum has her, you know, very upper crust snippy judgments with, you know, another panel of judges on, like, you know, how much something is either fabulous or sucks. But, you know, Tim Gunn, he's always very immaculate. He's always in his suit and tie, and, you know, he's apparently, I mean, I don't know beyond Project Runway. I don't know what the hell he does in the fashion industry, but he's apparently, you know, got some kind of pedigree. So it kind of fits to put him into this book. And, you know, this kind of like, you know, maybe have more of that kind of stuff. I'm surprised that it probably would have cost them too much money. You know, it's like have Heidi Klum running around in the front part of the book, you know, with the models. That would have fit.
Well, I don't think he detracted from the backup feature at all. I just, for me, didn't really add anything. They gave enough characterization for him in here that even if he were a completely fictional character, it would have worked. The use of AIM, not a bad idea to have them trying to steal the high-tech fabrics of these costumes, you know, the unstable molecules, the nano-mesh weaves, the vibranium microfibers, Iron Man's armor. I mean, really, they have this exhibit. They've got a functional set of Iron Man armor and apparently zero security.
Yeah.
That I found a little hard to believe. The comments about the beekeeper suits, I mean, to me that was pretty obvious jokes and unimpressive, you know what I mean? Having Tim Gunn basically be able to put on the suit and use it, I found a little far-fetched. You know, it was a mildly entertaining story, but it's the kind of thing, there's no way it should have been able to play out that way because they should have had a little security. Hell, the armor should have just been able to take care of the AIM stuff by itself, just, you know, on an automated program or something. But having a suit of armor there that anyone could essentially put on and use, to me, just seems ludicrous.
So apparently, I told my wife last night after I read it that I read this story that had Tim Gunn in it, and she said, "Oh, did he say he'll find a way to make it work?" And of course, as he puts on the Iron Man armor, he does say that. Apparently, that's his signature line on the show or something. So they got that in. I'd be curious as to, I have to, you know, obviously hasn't been on a show yet, or she would have known about it, or she would have told me, "Oh yeah, they talked about this comic book." It would be fun if, you know, if he actually holds up a copy of this comic book on the show and says, "Look, I'm in this comic," you know, kind of like Stephen Colbert, you know, showed the comic that he was in, or, you know, something like that. And then I wonder if that would have driven, you know, someone who watches that show to actually sample this comic, but, you know, it hasn't happened yet, so.
But who knows, maybe it will, and again, I'm curious who's going to go into a store specifically looking for this. You know, is it going to get them any new readers or not, or is it just going to be a curiosity thing for existing readers?
Yeah, certainly it is a curiosity item, leave it at that.
I gave it a 3, I thought it was okay. I think it was a confused mission statement for what they were trying to do. But, you know, we'll see where it goes. I'll see where it goes. I know you've not planning.
Let's put it this way. I am not going to buy this comic at full price. If I see it for $1.50 down the line, I'll buy the other issues. I'm not going to pay the $2.39 that it would cost for this $3.99 comic through DCBS. So I am perfectly willing to, you know, basically go in and get this book at $1 a copy. That's about what I'd be willing to pay for it. So I'm not going to say I'm never going to see the rest of the story. It's just I'm not going to be buying it new.
That's fair.
As it comes out. So I gave it a 2. You know, and again, that means okay, a few problems with execution, but still worth reading. That's our definition of a 2. That's basically how I felt about it. I didn't think it was poorly executed. I thought it was okay. And as I said, as I'm obviously not the target demographic for that, I think that's about where it belonged. So for me,
I'm just curious when they went into this, what their goal was and whether they felt they hit it or not. Slice of Life, I thought it was interesting for what it looks like, the direction they're going to go for the rest of the series, which may or may not be this, you know, it's, I don't know.
So. Right.
Shall we move on to our next book?
Sure.
This is Life and Times of Savior 28, issue number 5, which is the final issue of the series. We talked about the first issue a couple of months back. When did we talk about that? Whenever the first issue came out, I guess. So that would have been back in the episode 83 for March 11. Yeah, I had stockpiled a couple issues, so I read like 2, 3, and 4, I think, back to back, and then I read 5 last night.
Yeah, this I read 4 and 5 last night. I had 4 and 5 unread. I find this an interesting comic because it's certainly De Matteis's kind of commentary on almost the genre and also not just superheroes but politics and everything. And I mean the art is okay, but it, like the other one, it's a little stiff, a little, you know, not, it's almost kind of like Mike Allready in a certain way, you know?
I can see that.
Mike Allred's got some je ne sais quoi about it that, you know, kicks it up a couple of notches above this. This is, it's not bad, but it's kind of there. It helps tell the story. What I found interesting about the story was more of, and this is a very dense read for me. I mean, a lot of words in it, which I appreciate because that's the reason why I'm reading it is for De Matteis' story. But it's like a lot of just the commentary that he makes, you know, it seemed clear to me that he is making a lot of commentary on, you know, current politics and, you know, kind of the culture of celebrity and things like that. And it goes a lot beyond just comics. At least that was my kind of take on it.
I would agree really with all of that. It is very heavy on the captions and very heavy on the how he sees things and stuff like that. Or how things can be seen, whether he shares these views or was just writing them for the story. You know, who knows. Overall, I thought this was a good story in series, but what really didn't work for me was too much of this issue in particular, and I think it was true for the others, was told through these narrated captions and flashbacks and stuff. So I felt instead of reading the story, I was reading about the story. Now, it may seem like a subtle distinction, but it was one that removed me from the action because it wasn't happening in kind of the here and now, but had already happened.
Yeah, I can see that, and we've commented about that same thing on other stories that are told with that particular storytelling device. It does take you out of the story, and you're, even though you're reading a comic, right?
Mm-hmm.
It makes you painfully aware that you are, I guess, observing the action from afar as opposed to being part of it.
Well, it's like watching a documentary versus watching a movie about that same action.
Right.
You know, you get sucked into the story in the movie where the documentary is a little drier, a little, you know, removed. And, you know, so that again, took me out of the story a little bit. I felt they're in places a little almost preachy about how we try to tear down celebrities, which is the whole point of the story, and it was well done. The commentary was good on that. I thought it was very interesting and insightful and stuff. And while I thought this was a reasonably well-told and well-crafted story, and I didn't dislike it, it didn't really click with me the way I would have liked and the way I think it might have been able to if it hadn't been for kind of that past tense storytelling style. I think there's some great material in here. I think there's a ton of material in here. Because like you said, this is a dense read. A lot more happens in this single issue than some story arcs in other books. So, you know, if you're looking for a different view on literally, you know, kind of the life and times of a superhero or whatever, this is something I would recommend. For me, this issue left me, it didn't leave me totally cold, but I didn't get as deep into the story as I could have and feel I should have. So I gave this a rating of a 3. I thought it was a good average comic. I think it had the potential with this material to be certainly a 4, possibly even a 5, if it had been told in a real-time manner and really kind of sucked me into the story. If instead of finding out about, back when Orson Welles told him this way back, if we'd actually seen those events unfold, you know?
Yeah, I mean, they could have just flipped back and done a flashback kind of thing, and you were in the moment instead of hearing this guy narrating about it.
Yeah.
I felt the same way. I mean, I think I liked it a little more, but unfortunately I didn't like it that much more that it really pulled it up beyond a 3 for me. I mean, I think I gave it a high 3, whereas you were maybe more in the sweet spot on the 3. But, it wasn't all there. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, it's the kind of thing, if you'd came back and said, it's a 4 or whatever, it's like, hey, I can see that. You know, it certainly got the material there. It was just the way it presented it.
Well, for me, the thing that really kept it out of the 4 was the art. I mean, if I would have loved the art, you know, if I'm like looking at it like, yeah, you know, that art is, you know, the art.
Well, to me, the art
was there.
Yeah.
The art was, it didn't pull it up. It's like I said, I mean, I was a high 3, and if it had really solid art, it could have pulled it up into a solid 4 for me.
Well, I mean, to me, the art was just blah enough in terms of just plain, perfunctory, and just functional yet not having any real great style to it. That also kind of reinforced the whole, this is a documentary, not a story,
mm-hmm.
in my mind. I mean, the art is fully functional. It's clear what's going on. It's not bad art. But it has no pizzazz to it. It has no flair. It has no, wow, I'd get this comic just for the art.
Right.
So, Whereas there have been a couple where I've been, you know, not so hot on the story, but man, the art I'm just loving. So, I mean, that makes up for a multitude of sins on a story sometimes. I think this is something that would read better in trade, just because you'd get the whole story in one shot. Whereas for me, it was, you know, split over the course of, you know, 6 months.
Right. I think that definitely going from issue 4 to 5, I got a lot more out of that continuity than having, you know, like even in 4, I was like kind of like struggling to remember some of what had happened in, you know, 3. So.
Yeah. Cool.
Now, another book that I read this week that I just want to mention because we reviewed the other one a little bit is The Shield number 1 from DC. And this book, this is, you know, so J. Michael Straczynski did this, you know, the Red Circle one-shots that we reviewed on the show. And this one starts the regular series. And I missed the mark a little bit for me just because this, it was a little ambiguous. Was it in the DC universe? Were they doing something a little separate with it? And this one really kind of pulled me directly into the DC universe in a way that didn't strongly contribute to the story. It was just enough that it was distracting. I mean, you got like Kondak and Bialya, you know, which are, you know, your standard fake Middle Eastern countries in the DC universe. And you got Magog in the story and, you know, things like that that didn't really need to be there. I would have rather just concentrated more on the Shield. And, you know, if you're going to put it in the DC universe, I mean, go whole hog and don't just do this little, you know, fringe bits of DC universe. Just kind of dive in and, like, slap Green Lantern in there or something. Oh, bad choice because Blackest Night's going on, but you know what I mean, you know? But, you know, just do it.
Make it clear it's in the DC universe, not something where if you don't know about those countries, you don't know. I mean, it's the same thing that Simon Dark had where it said it was in Gotham, but there was nothing that felt like it was in Gotham. You know, I haven't read The Shield yet, but anytime
it didn't need to be, you could have told the same story. It didn't need to be, you know, Kondak and Bialya. And it's like, that's something that just takes me out of it. Like a lot of times in DC with like their fake locations, but and I don't know why it's kind of weird. Cause you know, like they're, Marvel certainly has fake countries like Wakanda and Latveria, but the DC one seemed a little, just always seem a little more forced to me. I don't know why that is.
Because there's nothing that defines them. It's a placeholder country, and, you know, whereas, you know, Latveria, it's Dr. Doom's country. It's you know, it exists because of him. Whereas, you know, Kondak and stuff, it's any Middle Eastern country.
Although they're trying to make, you know, like the Black Adam connection and stuff. And they mention Black Adam. And
They tried that before with, was it Queen Bee or something, and a few other things back in the Justice League eras, you know, but it doesn't stick.
Yeah.
So, I haven't read that yet. I haven't read anything other than the 3 we just talked about, but I do think with the Red Circle characters, they're sending mixed messages by branding it as the Red Circle stuff, yet trying to tie it into the DC universe and trying to have the best of both worlds, literally. And maybe they can do that, maybe they can't, but I don't know. It seems like if they just focus, like you said, on establishing the characters, making them as interesting as possible, then it shouldn't matter how tied in they are or are not to the DC universe.
And then I also read the 2 Blackest Night books that came out, and those are always top of the stack for me. And Blackest Night Batman, that was a great issue.
Like
5.
I really want to read those. I just haven't had time. I've been working really late. We are in crunch mode for pretty much through up until Thanksgiving and stuff. We just have a lot of work in front of us, a lot of stuff to do, so it's eating up a lot of my time. Not getting out of the office till like 9 or 10 some nights. So, which is why I was so tired, and why I haven't read any of those stuff.
Read it this weekend. Read Green Lantern Corps first, and then read Blackest Night Batman.
Okay, good to know the order to read them in, so cool.
Yeah, you can tell by the numbers on the
I'm tired enough. I don't know that I would have noticed the numbers.
Range. It's like every time they kill someone, it goes up 0.01. So great. The numbers are like higher on the... Which means that the Black Lanterns have killed about 4,700 people so far.
Interesting. Hadn't noticed that. That's cool. Yeah, I got about, 33 comics, 2 books. One was the second trade for Full Frontal Nerdity, and the other was the digitally drawing comics from DC. So, ton of stuff to read, and I've still got actually quite a bit from last week, too, that I just haven't gotten to. So hopefully I'll get some of that done this weekend, but we'll see.
Very good. Join us next week when we discuss JSA vs. Cobra number 4 from DC, Vengeance of Moon Knight number 1 from Marvel, and Atomic Robo and the Shadow from Beyond Time number 5 from Red 5 Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.